Thank you for helping us make Budget again last year. Thanks to your support, Lutheran Public Radio has been independent and in the black for almost 4 years. You've heard us say, now only our listeners can cancel us, and we mean it. Thanks for listening, thanks for your prayers, thanks for your financial support, and we're looking forward to partnering with you again in 2012. Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the world, issues, etc., and sacred music for the world, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
May the birth of the Prince of Peace remind the world where true happiness lies, and may your hearts be filled with hope and joy. For the Savior has been born for us.
The next president, the Lord said, is going to be like a pilot in an airplane who takes the controls as the plane is going into a steep dive and grabs control to try to bring the thing away from a crash.
Having that strong foundation of the faith and family allows America to be in a position where we can be more free. We can be free because we are good, decent, moral people.
I'm Daniel Bergquist. I'm from Lincoln, Nebraska, and I'm a Macintosh software engineer. And I love Issues Etc.
What surprises me every year this time when the top 10 religion stories come out is how many of those stories are really top 10 stories, period. How many of the top 10 media stories in the last year have some sort of nexus with religion and religious concerns. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Wednesday afternoon, January the 4th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking a little bit in this hour, the first part of this hour, about the top 10 religion stories of this last year with Terry Mattingly of Scripps Howard News Service. A little bit later, a conversation, a long-sought interview with Bishop Catherine Jeffords Shorey. She's presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church and author of a new book, The Heartbeat of God, Finding the Sacred in the Middle of Everything. We'll talk with her about the intersections of faith with issues like poverty, climate change, and the economy, as well as some of the controversy that her church has caused in worldwide Anglicanism over the last several years. Joining us to talk about the top 10 religion stories of this last year, 2011, Terry Mattingly, director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here as always.
You have looked at the top 10 religion stories of 2011 as assembled by religion writers. Is there one missing, in your opinion, from the top 10?
Well, it helps to know a little bit about where this poll comes from. The professionals who cover the religion beat in mainstream publications and magazines, television, etc., they have a committee of their officers for the Religion News Writers Association, and they draw up a ballot with approximately 26, 30 stories on it. And then members vote on it, and you end up with a top 10 list. We also, though, know now how the rest of the items in theirs fared. This year, the story that was at the top of the list, in my opinion, was very hard to argue that this wasn't one of the most important religion stories or religion-linked events of the year, and that was the kind of the moral implications and the debates that grew out of the killing, or some would say the assassination, of Osama bin Laden. I totally understand where it came from, that being voted as the number one story. At the same time, I wondered, and I immediately glanced down in the results to see where another story was that I thought was particularly important, and you had to go all the way down to 16 to get to another story that I was convinced had more to say about the very dangerous and confused land of Pakistan, which was the events back at when the two political assassinations claimed the lives of one of the nation's best known moderate progressive Muslim leaders, that was Governor Salman Taseer, and then also the only Christian on Pakistan's equivalent of the presidential cabinet, the minority affairs minister, Shahbaz Bhatti, were both assassinated. And what particularly struck me about this was that when the man who killed Salman Taseer, who turned himself in and admitted it, when he approached the bench for his arraignment, lawyers, crowds of lawyers and people in Pakistan threw rose petals and garlands of flowers at him and cheered him as he came to court. And even though this was one of the more prominent leaders of the nation, other Muslims did not feel they could safely even attend his funeral. And it was, to me, a very symbolic event. Both a Muslim had died and both a Christian had died, both trying to get rid of Pakistan's laws, which can result in as much as the death penalty for blasphemy against Islam. And blasphemy laws are a huge subject all along the Rim of Fire, which is what civil rights activists refer to as the region defined on one end by Nigeria, then running up through the Arab world and all the way across over to Indonesia in Asia. This human rights activists refer to this area as the Ring of Fire, or the Rim of Fire, because some, you know, large percentages, a vast majority of the nation, of the world's fights over human rights will occur along that belt. So, yeah, that was an example of a time when I thought there was a story that deserved way more attention than it got. And in this poll, I was, let's put it this way. The assassination of these two men, these very symbolic men, is two stories lower than the success of the Broadway movie, Broadway musical, The Book of Mormon.
So you think it should have made the top 10? Should it made the top 5?
I would have justified putting it in the top 5. I look at what's in the top 5, and most of them are pretty, they're big things, but they're also somewhat predictable things. I mean, you have Osama in number 1. Then the congressional hearings on the civil rights of American Muslims, where you had the House hearings on evidence of radicalism in some networks of mosques. Once again, you must emphasize the word some. While the Senate, Democrat-controlled, focused totally on civil rights crimes or crimes reported against Muslims. That's a pretty important story. I would admit that's easily a top 5, top 10. The indictment of the first of the Roman Catholic bishops involved in the scandal, the first time you've had an actual bishop indicted for alleged cover-ups of child abuse, that's number 3. That's a huge story, but it's also a continuation of a story that's been going on, you know, for years and years. I mean, the actual scandals of clergy abuse date back at least 30 years that the scandal's been going on. Number 4, the Catholic Church introduces the new English translation of the Roman Missal, a huge story that affects millions of people. That's a very important story, definitely top 10. The number 5 is where you get a lot more predictable, and that's the mainline church, Presbyterian Church USA, voting to allow local option on the ordination of partnered gay people, of non-celibate gays and lesbians. I would say that's a top 10 story, but that's where I'm beginning to say that's pretty much the same story we have. If you went back and pulled the RNA top 10 list for the last 10, 20 years, there probably is one gay ordination story in the top 10 every year. So I'm not sure it needed to go that high. 6 was Pope John Paul II being beatified. Huge story, top 10. I'm not sure if it's a top 5. When he's made a saint, I'm sure that will be much bigger. And then at number 7, you've got the non-story of the year. You have the radio evangelist Harold Camping with his 2 predictions of the end of the world. That made a lot of headlines, but is that really that significant or important a news story?
That's what I was wondering.
I could go on and on.
Well, that's what I was wondering about the Camping. Especially as it's in, if you look at it on the list, juxtaposed next to the beatification of John Paul II, which is probably among stories of the decade. And then you have a character that he may be well known in his circles, and of course he has a lot of influence in it with his radio network. But Harold Camping, I heard a news quiz on National Public Radio, and the entire panel of comedians there didn't even know who Harold Camping was, and he was great fodder for comedy. It seems to be no story whatsoever that deserves a top 10.
You want to know a little honest point here? I didn't know who Harold Camping was. And I've been on the religion beat for quite some time and have done an awful lot of coverage of significant evangelicals, you know, Pentecostals, charismatics, whatever. I had to look up who he was, you know, when the headline broke. I mean, that surely should give you some sort of an, you know, indication that this was not exactly Billy Graham's favored child or something. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the Rob Bell story, another one that made the top 10, I think that's actually a pretty good example of a story that deserved to go top 10, kind of a behind-the-scenes story that still stood for something very important. But there's no way I think that that story is more important than the potential disintegration of human rights in Pakistan. I mean, than the symbolic issue of the blasphemy laws. There's no way I think those are in any way near comparable.
Do you think, let's just deal with number 9, the Personhood Initiative failing
yeah.
in Mississippi. Now, this is one of those kind that you probably can also find on a lot of
yep.
RNS lists.
Yep. Yeah, that's another example. That's a story that comes up every year. And frankly, I thought one vote on that in Mississippi did not necessarily make a top 10 story.
Did the 400th anniversary of the King James Version of the Bible automatically make the top 10? It only squeaked by getting in 10, but did it automatically make the top 10?
I don't know. I didn't. I had a lot of public relations people approach me with stories related to that this year. And I thought that was very important. It was interesting for a feature story. But did I in my mind even think of that as a news story? No. I did not even think of that as a breaking news story this year.
More of an
anniversary.
To be perfectly
honest with you. Yeah, I know it's an anniversary. I know it was on the calendar. No, that to me is not a top 10 story.
All right, when we come back, we'll talk more about the top religion stories of last year with Terry Mattingly of Scripps Howard News Service.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly. issuesetc.org. Stay connected. issuesetc.org.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. live on most smartphones? Just go to the Listen Live page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the smartphone link, and you can listen on your smartphone weekday afternoons between 3 to 5 Central. Old theology, new technology, Issues Etc. now broadcasting live to the world on most smartphones. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. So visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastor to hold a seminar in your area. Just go to theclcc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Wednesday afternoon, January the 4th. We're coming to you live. We're talking about the top 10 religion stories of last year. Our guest is Terry Mattingly of Scripps Howard News Service. In about 15 minutes, we'll interview Catherine Jeffert Shorey. She's presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church, and talk to her about her church and her theology. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January is, wow, what a way to start a year. A book that is steeped in the theology of the cross, and it has a rather jarring but very honest look at Christian suffering. The book is called The Problem of Suffering, A Father's Hope from Concordia Publishing House. You can find out more about this great book on the theology of the cross at our website, issuesetc.org. You can browse before you buy right there, or call and order The Problem of Suffering, A Father's Hope from Concordia Publishing House. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. It's the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January. Terry, let's talk a little bit about number four. That's, I think, a story that probably deserves a higher place on the list than it got, the retranslation of the Roman Catholic Missal for all the vernaculars. I thought it should have fallen higher on the list, given, if only, its ongoing consequences for the majority of Christians in the world for decades to come.
Yeah, I was comfortable with that anywhere in the top five, but I don't think, surely it couldn't have gone lower than that. And I think you could justify it in terms of actual impact on people in the news. I think you could justify that definitely as high as two or three. Year after year, the columns I write about issues that are so serious and so long-lasting that they end up being debated in the context of worship, those columns probably get as much response or more response than anything else I write about it. I'm talking about things like the worship wars. In a Missouri Synod Lutheran context, it would be to some degree the kind of the megachurch versus the liturgical strain. But you have these, you have comparable tensions and fault lines in almost every single denomination in the United States. It's very hard to change how people worship without really, really either getting them upset or ecstatic, and there seem to be no emotions in between.
You said when John Paul II actually crosses the line from beatification into canonization, it's going to be a big story. Will that be one of the big stories of next year, perhaps?
I don't know the schedule. The Roman Catholic Church, the way it moves forward on these things with the investigations, the devil's advocate, the verification process for X number of miracles, it can take a long time. And the main thing, though, is that's where it begins to get unpredictable, you know, because that's where you're literally, you're waiting, and from the viewpoint of the Catholic Church, you're waiting for God to act, and not only for God to act, but for God to act in a way that can somehow be debated and proven. It's a very interesting process.
Should the prominence of Mitt Romney, a Mormon, in the Republican field, even though we had to wait until January for the first caucus here yesterday, but should that story have been in the top 10?
Well, there now. This is a classic example of a huge story without a time hook, in the sense that there was no single event that you point at it and say, this is the story. On the following day, the following thing happened. And is there going to be some sort of blow-up or some sort of reconciliation event, or is there going to be a major speech where Romney finally finds a way to crack out of his kind of his 25 to 28% box that he's trapped in? I actually have a post up at Get Religion Today that argues that the press does finally seem to be realizing that there are some other huge factors involved in this other than just evangelicals versus Mormons, which seems to be the template they've had. If you stop and think about the modern Republican Party in many, many different ways, and you know, where its strengths are, where it draws its fire, where it draws its activism, a man that can accurately be described as a moderate Mormon from Massachusetts, I would say that his 25 percentile box has a lot to do with all three of those capital M's, right? Moderate, Mormon, Massachusetts. And the people are beginning to realize that there are other issues here, that the large percentage of people in Iowa who genuinely can be considered evangelicals, they didn't all go for the same candidate. And some of them voted for, you know, for Mitt Romney. it's definite that his Mormonism is going to be a huge issue. I think he's still the presumed nominee. However, at some point, the press has got to realize that there are issues of culture. I would dare say there are issues of class involving the kind of blue-collar pickup truck world of Tea Party and cultural Reagan Democrat conservatism, that whole kind of world, which Rick Santorum kind of stands for, you know, with his blue-collar background and everything else. But this idea that there are three Republican parties right now and that there are religious implications in all three. The country club is kind of going for Romney and backing him as the establishment candidate, but there's religious issues there. Then you've got Ron Paul with the whole idea that you can be a libertarian with a capital L while at the same time attempting to be a cultural conservative at the same time, you know, with his background as a doctor, et cetera. That's a fascinating religion story. And then you have that the anything but Romney cultural conservative, currently that's Rick Santorum, that's got religion all over it. All three of these categories within the Republican Party and their process toward nomination, there's religious content in all three of those groups, and you're not going to be able to cover that story just by throwing an occasional label at it.
So should Mitt Romney receive the party's nod for the nomination, does that story in 2012 automatically deserve a top 10 rating?
Oh, yes, certainly. I mean, but the other thing that's going to turn around there, at that point, the press is going to have to face, I hope, what liberals think of Mormons. And there are some ethnic tensions surrounding the history of the Mormon Church, for better and for worse. At that point, the Mormon story will not just be evangelicals hate Mormons, which, by the way, I think is a horrible way of looking at this. I mean, Mormons and evangelicals, especially Southern Baptists, they've done a lot of work together, you know, in the last couple of decades. But are there doctrinal tensions there? Of course there are. Another big story, I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago, there's another story looming in the background there that at some point journalists are going to have to take serious. The Southern Baptist Convention and the Mormon Church would have to be on anyone's short list of the only people in modern North America who take evangelism seriously. There are thousands upon thousands of Mormons who used to be Southern Baptist, and there are thousands upon thousands of Southern Baptists who used to be Mormons. These two bodies of people are in competition with one another, not just over doctrine, but for just kind of space on the ground in the suburbs of places like Dallas and Atlanta and all over. That's definitely a top 10 story, but it's not going to simply be a story about one political candidate. It just can't be. If the press doesn't make it bigger than that, it's just not doing its job.
With about a minute and a half, Terry, what should we be looking for as far as major religion stories in 2012?
Well, I hope that the whole Barack Obama, what is his religious point of view, I'm hoping that just as much that Barack Obama gives some sort of very candid, open interview about his approach to the Christian faith as a mainstream, middle-of-the-road, liberal Christian, I'm hoping he gives that frank interview just as much as I'm hoping that there is a frank, candid, and informed interview with Mitt Romney. You can make a case right now in America that the press is doing just as bad a job of covering liberal Protestantism as it is in covering Mormons or evangelicals or anybody else. I mean, if people don't know what Barack Obama believes as a Christian, after all the testimonies he's given and everything else he's done, the press deserves some blame for that. So I think religion is going to be all over the upcoming campaign. And I'm hoping that there is informed, accurate, and fair coverage of the religious faith of Barack Obama just as much as Mitt Romney or anybody else.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
You bet.
All right. When we come back on this Wednesday afternoon, January the 4th, we're going to be talking with the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church, Bishop Catherine Jeffords Shorey. Think about it this way. In the last generation, 40 years or so, the Episcopal Church USA has seen the ordination of women back in the 70s, its first openly gay bishop, that was in the early 2000s, and the ordination of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered persons in general accepted only a couple years ago. So where do you think the Episcopal Church is headed in the next generation? Maybe more importantly, in the next half hour of the program, where does the presiding bishop of that church body think the Episcopal Church is headed in the next generation? We'll also talk with Bishop Shorey about what she calls the reality of the incarnation. She says that our faith begins with Jesus of Nazareth rather than the Christ of generations and millennia to come. I wonder, what's the difference between the two? We'll find out in an interview on the intersections of faith with issues like poverty, climate change, and the economy with Bishop Catherine Jeffords Shorey, presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church.
Looking for a church that has a small, family-like atmosphere, yet strives for excellent liturgical worship with outstanding music while focused on God's Word and sacraments? A church located in the heart of St. Louis and reaching out to the neighborhood with Jesus Christ and Him crucified? I'm Pastor John Helwig of Emmaus Lutheran Church at 2241 South Jefferson in St. Louis. I invite you to join us for Bible class Sunday mornings at 9 and worship at 10:30. Visit us on the web at emmaus-stl.org.
Here are two new ways that you can promote Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. business card and the Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer. Simply go to the support page at issuesetc.org, click Issues Etc. business cards, print the page on suitable stock paper, and cut along the lines. We also have an 8.5 by 11 inch flyer for the bulletin board at your church. issuesetc.org, go to the support page, click Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer, and print.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Catholic bishops respond to ACLU charges.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops is defending itself against the American Civil Liberties Union. Recent charges argue that the church violates the Constitution by not providing contraceptives and abortions to victims of human trafficking. Already, the Obama administration has issued regulations that will mandate offering such services to employees at Catholic institutions in clear violation of church teachings. As Archbishop Dolan warned, never before have we faced this kind of challenge in our ability to engage in the public square as people of faith. If we do not act now, the consequence will be grave.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.